Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You are listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Shore, it won't let you down.
Hello and welcome to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Shore, 72-hour protection. We're a man down today. Lee Costello has a bug. Maybe he was overcome by all the excitement in the hurling at the weekend. But I'm delighted to say that Neil McManus joins us today. And like myself, Neil, you were there in Croke Park for two brilliant days of hurling. It was nearly like a holiday, to be honest, getting to go on Saturday and Sunday for myself.
It's the best sporting weekend of the year, in my opinion. You get to see the four best teams in Ireland in action. And I know we often play football off against hurling, which is totally unfair in football, because football is a super game. But I don't think there's any other sport on the planet that compares to hurling. And it's like a festival of hurling, that All-Ireland semi-final weekend. I prefer it to the final even. It's just fantastic, and especially whenever you've got the climax to the second game like we had yesterday between Clare and Kilkenny.
Yeah, it is amazing, because when Saturday, you go to the match Saturday, Galway and Limerick, and I wasn't even planning on going back on Sunday, but it was just so good on Saturday that you're like, there's another day right before us now, we'll go back again. And it definitely didn't disappoint. It was probably even a better game on Sunday. But yeah, you were, I suppose, we were even lucky, Neil, like, to be up in the press box, to be enjoying it, and to be working at a day like that. And I know you were on co-commentary on Saturday and punditry on Sunday. So how have you enjoyed the new role since your retirement?
It's thoroughly enjoyable, to be honest, because like we're just discussing the things that, you know, you and I would be discussing in a normal conversation over a pint or over a cup of tea. So it's great fun. I'd have been at the games regardless, and like you get, you know, I suppose you get to be involved in some very minor way, which is just brilliant. And obviously yesterday with the studio piece, I was alongside Thomas Niblo, Lee Chin and Paul Murphy. So, you know, they're great lads to be doing anything with, and it was brilliant to be having the crack and talking about the games with them. So that was great. And then co-commentary, something I've only done a little bit of previously with RTE, but I really enjoyed it now. And Oisin Langan was looking after me there, and he was so well prepared that, you know, it made it an enjoyable day rather than something that you felt under pressure with. So that was great, and very, very lucky to be in that position that you get to go and enjoy these games. And I don't know, have it very loosely described as work, but that's not how it felt to me at the weekend, I can assure you.
It probably is. It's pressurised, I suppose, doing the commentary. But like when you have that knowledge, and you probably know every hurler in the game just with a quick look. So that definitely stands to you when you're doing something like co-commentary.
It does. And I think now more so than ever, because obviously this this is, I'm just finished up, you know, about a month or two with Antrim. We do so much analysis now as Inter-County hurlers these days that you really do have a good handle on not just the, you know, the starting 15, but the people who are likely to see pitch time as well. So that's a big bonus. And actually, it's something, I think it was Liam Sheedy said it to me whenever he was describing a panel as a whole. He said, you're 1 to 15 are your championship starters. Your number 16 to 26 are your championship finishers. And your number 27 to 35 or 36, whatever that would be, are your championship winners. He said, those are the group of people who drive, you know, the panelists, if you like, to try and keep their spot and get into that 26. And then those guys here in the, who are on the sub bench are driving the lads here on the team on. So it's actually, it's all to do with your 27 to 35 or 36. So just being very recently involved with an Inter-County team, the amount of analysis that you do does give you a good insight and a good amount of information on how people play as well, and little things about them, as well as knowing who they are.
Yeah. I often wonder when you're a co-commentator there, is it tough not to, like when there's a great goal scored, like even looking back at the weekend, Shane O'Donnell's goal up in the press box, I seen so many people just jump out of the chair when something like that happens. And, you know, your nearly instinct is to go, like, let a roar out of you. Is it tough to kind of hold it back at times?
I didn't hold it back on yesterday when he hit the net with that one, because that's not that I was, you know, had any skin in the game at all, really, but it was just, there was a sense of anticipation when that ball was played in, and as soon as he grabbed it, you knew it was on. He's such an exciting player, Shane, and he's a real eye for goal, obviously, and whenever it hit the roof of the net, we were all so excited simply because it was game on, and we knew that, you know, this was going to be a grandstand finish. So I'm sure it probably would have been hard to hold yourself to a respectable level of volume whenever that one hit the net. But, you know, we were on, when you're doing studio work, you're on before the game at halftime and directly afterwards, but you get to enjoy the game for what it is alongside the lads. And Paul Murphy certainly didn't cheer, but myself and Lee did, because, you know, it made the climax where it was.
Yeah, Paul was probably cheering when Owen Murphy made the brilliant save seconds later. Just before we get into the games, it was up in the press box where I was chatting to you, Neil, and you told me that it was 17 or 18 years that you were hurling with Antrim before you decided to hang up the hurl this year. So I suppose, how has it been since you came to that decision?
I knew all year, to be honest, that this would be my last year. I considered it very, very strongly at the end of the previous season, to be honest. And I may have went at that stage, only for this season coming, we were missing Conor McCann and Kieran Clark, who would be our, you know, two inside forwards that play with most regularity. Connor's a big physical inside full forward with a great eye for a goal, and then Kieran Clark is just a magician of a player, and they bounce off each other really well. Both of them, unfortunately, done their cruciates and are doing a serious amount of work to be back. Neither of them played any county hurling this year. Connor's back playing for his club now, and Kieran Clark will probably only really be fully ready for training and for contact come pre-season of next season. So, look, they'll both be there this season. We knew we were going to be without them for the 2023 campaign. So, I that was kind of in the forefront of my mind whenever I was making my decision. I'm glad I did play this year because I thoroughly enjoyed it again. And I think Antrim have really developed, actually, in the last 12 months to a place where I think I'll have great days watching them, actually. And I was very happy that I could leave it at a stage where I was confident and probably quite content with how things have went over the season in terms of where the panel's at. I wouldn't be content with all the results, obviously. I think we missed a huge opportunity to be the third place team in Leinster this year, but happy that that's now the standard that we're that we're working to and clipping at the heels of Wexford and Dublin and trying to make that step up.
Yeah, definitely positive steps being made. I think we have to start with Kilkenny and Clare, Neil. It was I suppose right down to the very end, it was there was excitement. We talked about Shane O'Donnell's goal. It goes on a few minutes and it comes up to Owen Murphy's save. Brendan Cummins called it the best save that he's ever seen. It had everyone in the stadium was so, I suppose, like the stadium wasn't full, but the noise at this stage of the game was, it was incredible. And what a game. I suppose, look, disappointing for Clare in the finish, but I suppose we'll start with the atmosphere. The place nearly shook when Peter Duggan went for that volley, Neil, and Owen Murphy's save was just, watching it back, the slow motion replay, it was just it was nearly beyond belief how he got just the very top of his hurl to flick the ball onto the crossbar.
And the ball was almost already by him. It was like he was reaching behind himself to make the save. It was utterly incredible. It was like something out of the Matrix. You know, it was just an unbelievable save. And I'm certainly not going to disagree with Brendan Cummins when he's talking about the best saves that he's ever seen. And I said that as well. I said, I think that's possibly the best save I've seen because of the importance of the moment as well. And Owen Murphy is just incredible. He's brought goalkeeping to another level. In the first half, he caught a ball that was going 6-8 inches over the bar. Like, he didn't take it down as hurl, he caught it, you know. And like, that's actually something that he told me he worked on at a different stage, you know. And his plyometric ability to get up that high is sensational as well. But he's the whole package. He's the most comfortable goalkeeper on the ball in the game as well. Obviously, he plays out the field with his club, Glenmore. But as a spectacle, it was different level, I thought, you know, to what we've seen this year. Obviously, a fantastic Munster final, some unbelievable games in Munster. But those 20 minutes when Clare just decided, look, we're going to push up and we're going to go for this. They had obviously deployed Shane Amore as the sweeper, which I think, you know, he's a really good ball carrier. But as a sweeper, I think he'd have been far better man marking somebody and maybe trying to free up, you know, John Conlon, for example. But I loved the fact that Brian Lowen said, okay, look, that didn't work. We're going to push up and go at this here. And the Clare players bought into it. And they hurled the shirts off their back, really. And Brian Lowen must be incredibly proud of them, even though I know he had mentioned a few decisions. And we had a look at a couple of them as well, to be honest, and thought that it was harsh. But we thought they might have got a favourable one or two near the end of the game. So these things do tend to balance themselves out. The disallowed goal for Clare, you know, he had blown the whistle, you know, maybe couple of seconds before that ball had been won and stuck in the net. So refereeing's the hardest job in the GAA, so, you know, I think Colm got, you know, probably 90% of them right, in honesty. But as a spectacle, it was just so enjoyable to be there, to be watching those two teams going at it, and the way they played, the manliness, the physicality they brought, the honesty, the endeavour. You know, we've seen for Shane O'Donnell's goal, Tony Kelly was back on the edge of the D, picking up that ball to set up that opportunity. And on two different occasions, we've seen TJ Reid winning ball inside his own 20-yard line, which is just phenomenal. It shows you what it meant and the lengths that those players were willing to go to reach an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, there are so many things, I suppose, to talk about from this game. I just want to talk to you about Owen Murphy, because I know you'd have played against him on many occasions, and he just strikes me as a great personality in the game. And I know from up in the press box yesterday, I could even hear him shouting at different lads and giving out instructions. And there was one stage as well where Mikey Butler was alongside him all day. And I wrote a piece about this too. Mikey Butler, while he was marking him tight, he wasn't, you know, there was no dirt or there was no, you know, there was none of the dark arts in the way he was playing yesterday. But I seen at one stage Owen Murphy was out giving Tony Kelly a drink of water, do you know, as well. And, do you know, he just seems like a great character. And I'm sure you've come across that down through the years playing against him.
He's such a sound man. Owen Murphy is an absolute gent. He's as good a lad as you'll bump into. It just happens to be that he's, you know, the best goalkeeper of his generation, really. He's so down to earth, so likeable. It wouldn't be an uncommon trait with those Kilkenny boys, regardless of the success that they've had. They just seem so grounded, such good lads, and Owen's well up for a bit of crack as well, and he's good fun to be around. And that helps. That likeability factor really, really helps. And I would say he's revered within that changing room, I would think, because Kilkenny have continually produced these guys who are in the argument for the best player of all time. And yet when you meet them one-to-one, be it Henry Shefflin, be it Tommy Walsh, or Paul Murphy yesterday, they're so down to earth. They're just really stand-up lads who would never go past you without saying hello, and they just love their hurling, and they're just incredibly dedicated, but they play the game in that brilliant kind of warrior spirit where it's body on the line for the 75, 76 minutes, however long it is, and then it's a handshake afterwards. And they're, you know, I think you've summed that up perfectly. Like, when the ball's there to be won, Owen Murphy would go through you for it, but whenever he's out giving Maggie Butler a drink, Tony Kelly gets one too.
Yeah. No, it struck me there yesterday. You mentioned the sweeper, and it was a surprise hearing that 15, 20 minutes before throwing that Ian Galvin is off and Shane Amore's on. I suppose from then you do think that Clare playing a sweeper. You would imagine that John Conlon, seeing as he had played that role like a lot of the year, that he drops back as a centre back, that he would be the man that did it. Brian Lohan was speaking about it after, and he said, you know, we just did not want to be out of the game at half time. And I don't know, is it a bit surprising that they had that attitude coming up against Kilkenny, but they didn't have it, say, coming up against a Limerick?
I think it was more Croke Park than the opposition. Croke Park has not been a happy hunting ground for Clare in the past 6, 7, 8 years, and I think that was a factor. He wanted them to get... I thought it was really smart, actually. And whenever I seen the change, I knew exactly what was happening. I knew Clare were going to deploy a sweeper. Now, I did think that Shane Amore would mark and John Conlon would go free, but look, that's... You know, Brian Lohan seen that differently. But I just thought that John Conlon's distribution of the ball is so good, and he's so composed. He's obviously, I know Tony's captain, but John's the leader of that team. You can tell it on the field just by how he plays. Like, nobody plays with less regard for their own body than John Conlon. He's an absolute warrior. And you need your sweeper, actually, to be that type of player, because there will come a time when the opposition break the line and that person has to get back and just throw themselves in front of whatever danger is there, and John will do that for you with his heart in his hand. So yeah, I found it strange that it wasn't John who was the sweeper, but I thought Brian Lohan got it right. I think had I been setting up Clare yesterday, regardless of the opposition, I think having a seventh defender was probably a good idea, just to ensure that the same thing that has happened to them again, or has happened to them before, didn't happen again. And he protected against that pretty well. They were 5 points down at half time, and I think, you know, that allowed them to settle. And then he said, okay, now look, we are five down, we need to go for this, and they have the forwards to go for it. I know why he hasn't done that all year, really, in some other games, because whenever you play a sweeper, you obviously give the opposition a sweeper too. Clare's forwards are unbelievable. Clare's six, front six, are as good as anything in the game. So you know, you're obviously helping the opposition in terms of tying down your biggest asset, and Clare's biggest asset is their forward line. But look, I think that I understand the reason why they done it, and then obviously with the 5-point deficit at half time, they had to push up and they went for it. But I think the only thing I would have done differently is I would have kept somebody in beside Peter Duggan. Peter Duggan had his best game of the championship by a mile yesterday. That's a real good trait. If you can have an average season, which by Peter's standards he had, and was able to produce that sort of level of performance yesterday on the biggest of days, is a really good trait to have. He's a serious player, and he's capable of those moments of brilliance. We've seen one of them in the semi-final, I think it was 2018, possibly.
That point.
Yeah, he scored that ridiculous point, you know, which is phenomenal. And he almost done it again yesterday with that volley for the goal, where he just hit it on the snapshot first time, which was... That was moving. Peter hits the ball incredibly hard, which just makes the save more impressive. But yeah, Clare should have kept somebody in beside him. You know, I know they kind of went for it was kind of a bit of a diamond formation with the four forwards and Peter then a lone man inside in the square. But they should have had, you know, Mark Rogers or Shane O'Donnell in playing off Peter. I thought Peter ended up a bit of an island by himself, and he actually done pretty well, I thought, with the ball that came in. He won quite a bit of it, made it stick. And I think that's the only thing tactically I would have changed from a Clare point of view. I'd have made somebody push up with him because, look, Kilkenny were deploying Richie Reid just in front of him, really, and all that Hugh Lawler was going to have to do was break the ball, and it was Richie Reid's then. So it was a really hard task for Peter. I've had that job before, and it's a thankless enough one. But I thought he done it pretty well. And I think the Clare scores they got in the first half were, you know, moments of individual brilliance, great scores from hard angles and great bits of running that weren't having to be replicated in the Kilkenny side. They just kind of used the ball better, played more to their system, and, you know, were a little more at ease. And the Kilkenny forwards took on the Clare backs much more. And obviously one more freeze as a consequence. And TJ had already become the highest scorer in the championship by half time, I think, ever. So, yeah, I think that will be the only thing that Brian might look back on and say, you know, I wish I had pushed somebody up alongside Peter. But I think Brian Lohan's overriding emotion after that game will be pride in the performance that his players put on, because they carried out the game plan the first half. Okay, they were a little bit further behind than they wanted to be, but they clearly just wanted to be in the game at half time. And then the second half, whenever he told them, okay, shackles are off, lads, we're going to go for it, they threw everything at Kilkenny, absolutely everything. And, you know, whenever your team give you that level of effort, it would be so hard to think of it as a failure, because even though Kilkenny go through to the All-Ireland final, there was no losers in that Clare team yesterday.
Yeah, you're right about Peter Duggan, Neil. He what an unbelievable game that man had. And as you said, he was up against it with ball coming in on top of him, Hugh Lawler behind him, Paddy Deegan in front of him. But he loves Croke Park, and we've seen it that day against Galway in 2018. He maybe hasn't been he hasn't reached that level since maybe coming back from Australia, I would say, to the level he played yesterday. But, man, he was fired up yesterday. Himself and Hugh Lawler were having some... They were getting horsing into it as well, and you could see the kind of sportsmanship between them too at different stages. I remember one time Duggan kind of knocked Lawler over the line to win a 65, and Lawler was in a bit of bother, and Duggan comes over and gives him a pat on the back as the ball when Rogers is hitting the 65. So, and the same for John Conlon too. You mentioned that he did disregard for his own body, and that was the case when he got a bit of a sickener, a late one off Tom Phelan. It was actually after one of the goal chances, and you know, he you could see he was in bother, but and him coming in with the concussion worries as well, but he was straight back up, and I suppose that kind of sums up the spirit he has. And on the sweeper thing, I suppose, Neil, like, you know, if Clare had won this game and they were so close to doing that, if Conor Fogarty doesn't make that unbelievable block from Mark Rogers, and you know, if a few other little things, if Owen Murphy doesn't make that save, like, we're not really talking about this sweeper as being a bad thing. And I suppose I was reading in the Irish Times this morning, Malachy Clerkin had it, that memory is a ton weight, and you could, you, that was probably what was in Brian Lohan's mind, was the memory of what happened last year, when Kilkenny ripped him to shreds and the game was over basically at half time. So you can see where Clare are coming from, we're coming from in that perspective. And I suppose in the second half, as you said, they kind of had to go for it. They were 5 points down. And, you know, they really did cut loose, and it was all them. It was similar enough to the Galway-Limerick game the day before, where Clare just completely took over. But I suppose the frustrating thing for Clare, and this is something that you'll often see with Kilkenny, Neil, is that, like, a lot of their lads did hurl well. Like, you're thinking Dave McInerney, an unbelievable game. David Fitzgerald was brilliant. Cathal Malone was brilliant. And just comparing them, I thought they hurled a lot more balls, say, in the middle third than the likes of Conor Fogarty, Paddy Deegan and Richie Reid. And, you know, Don Logue had this stat in the Sunday game. Clare had a lot more possessions, a lot more shots. But how do Kilkenny do it that they're just so economical?
Yeah, the Kilkenny are so at home in Croke Park. I think it's always where they play their best hurling. But it's the way they've played, you know, over the last, I would say the last two or three seasons. It is Limerick-esque, there's no way about it. They do not waste the ball. We had a great clip pulled on it yesterday where, I can't remember now exactly which of the defenders, it might have been, I wonder, was it David McInerney, who he drove it down the line kind of aimlessly, really, under a bit of pressure. And Paddy Deegan just came back, lifted the ball, swept it up, and looked up the field, and, you know, Owen Cody had made a run inside, but he seen Adrian Mullen about, you know, 50, 60 yards away. He just pinged at the hand, and boom, the ball's played inside and a point. And that was the difference. You know, Clare didn't mind the ball just as well as they should have, and Kilkenny really, really do. Richie Reid, whereas, that really suited him to be playing that sweeping role. He does it for Ballyhale as well, obviously, and he uses the ball so well. TJ, when he drops back, he never gives away the ball. And Adrian Mullen, I thought, you know, yeah, Clare did win that battle in the middle of the field, but Adrian Mullen, you know, was on plenty of ball too, and he played pretty well, I thought, now, and that was his first game back in a while, so that augurs well for Kilkenny moving into the final, because they'll need him flying. He matches up really nicely with the Limerick midfield pairing. So I just think Kilkenny are really comfortable in what they're doing now. This new system where they do try to hold the ball a bit more, it is a more possession-based game than what they would have been traditionally used to. I think they're comfortable with it now. I think they enjoy playing the system that they're implementing, but it's still very much built on the hard work. It's just a different type of hard work. There's much more running off the shoulder rather than hard work under a dropping ball or hard work trying to win your individual battle. They run off the ball as much as any team that I've played against. The last time we played Kilkenny was in the Leinster Round Robin up in Belfast, and I was full forward and Hugh Lawler was full back, but any time that the ball was poked out to a corner back or a half back one possession, Hugh Lawler was gone, hoping to take the 1-2 with him. So you have to be on your guard at all times and trying to track those runners and maybe break those runs a little bit. But that Kilkenny are now comfortable doing that. They're very, very physically strong. They are the best placed team to challenge Limerick in the physical stakes. Nobody has been fully able to do that yet, but I think Kilkenny are the best place to do it. And it just remains to be seen, can they create enough opportunities? I think they'll need goals to beat Limerick. Can they create those goal-scoring chances? Because if they can create them, I believe they would finish them. They have the marquee forwards, but it's set up brilliantly, so it is actually for an unbelievable final. I think Limerick will win it. I think it'll be really, really tight, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kilkenny were able to get over the line, but I think they'll need goals to do it.
Yeah, well, the man that got the goal yesterday was Owen Cody, and between himself and Adrian Mullen, the Ballyhale connection, two of them were were unbelievable. A special, I suppose, credit to Mullen when he's only back, his first game in a long time. And any sports person knows how tough it is to slot straight back in when you haven't been playing the last few games. But he's so good in the ball, and it was no bother to him. Owen Cody, after the match, he was interviewed, and Damien Lawler says, "Owen, can you make any sense out of that?" And Owen Cody was straight back. He said, "Yeah, I can make plenty of sense out of it, to be honest. We're a good team. I don't think a lot of people give us credit." Owen is a great personality as well. We had him on the show here before, but the goal he got, it's something that Clare will be, they'll be having nightmares, and they're so good at that short passing. And I suppose Michael Deignan summed it up in the commentary, though. He said when you've just taken control in an All-Ireland semi-final, that's not the time to get clever. And I suppose that was just the way it was, and Rory Hayes was caught out, and you don't give TJ, he got the ball, you don't give him that chance, and you don't give it to Owen Cody, the form he was in yesterday.
No, they'll be mightily disappointed in that sequence of play. I actually started a little bit earlier in terms of Ivor Culligan had an opportunity to let the ball go long, and he stepped back inside and gave Rory Hayes the ball whenever he was under a little bit of pressure, and he couldn't get his feet set to strike, so he was going to have to try and break a tackle. So he was almost set up to fail. And he'll be, God, he'll have nightmares about that, all right. Now, it was a brilliant rob, in fairness, to the Kilkenny forwards. They worked like dogs, and, as soon as it was turned over and fell favourably for TJ, he always takes the right option, gave it to Owen Cody, and he just fired it low to the net. But, Clare really didn't have to take that chance. That's what will really be irking them today. They could have just put that ball long. They were winning the ball long. And it's just unfortunate that they, decided to try and play it out in that exact instance. And Michael Deignan's just right. Momentum was with them. And those things just, that was totally against the run of play, that goal. And it was the difference in the game, as the long and the short of it, unfortunately. You have to make people work for every score. And, whenever you're giving them away, you're really doing yourself a disservice.
As you said, the Kilkenny forwards, they're always working. They're working as hard as any backs, and it was a credit to Billy Ryan there that he could have easily kind of just said, right, Quilligan and Hayes have this. This ball is gone. He came in behind Hayes, and Hayes couldn't really see him coming because he came from the angle. So brilliant from him. You mentioned TJ Reid there, and he was interviewed after the game, and he was told, you've passed out Patrick Horgan. You're the top scorer in the championship history now. And I thought it was funny his response. He said, "Well, first he said, did I?" And then he said, "I see Hoggy is coming back next year." So that sums up TJ. And I'm sure himself and Patrick Horgan will have another shootout in the weeks to come. We'll come back with a small bit with a chat about the Limerick and Galway game. But first, we're going to the Shure No Sweat quiz. In partnership with our friends at Shure, official statistic partners of the GAA, we're now going to look at the most eye-catching stats from the championship weekend. Last week's winner is Owen Brady, who correctly told us that Dublin's Colin Basquell is the top scorer from play in the Gaelic Football Championship. For this week's quiz, we're going to stay with stats and top scorers. And the question is, who did TJ Reid surpass as the top scorer in hurling championship history yesterday with his 12-point tally? So who did TJ pass out? So now it's up to you, our audience. Give us the answer to this stat-related question on our social media to be in with a chance of winning some Shure themed prizes. Winners will be announced on the show next week. Okay, so Limerick and Galway. I don't think there's anywhere else to start, really, other than the 25th minute of this game. And at this stage, you're thinking, it's 1-12 to 1-6. Galway are on fire. We're after watching some of the best 25 minutes of hurling, I would say, of the year. And you're thinking, are Galway and Limerick, are these streets ahead? Are these the two standard bearers, the best teams in the country? And this is them at their peak. And Galway on fire, Brian Concannon, Conor Whelan. And I suppose to break the momentum, and it was highlighted all over the place, really. Nicky Quaid goes down, and there's a break in the play. Henry's going mad. I suppose, what were your thoughts on the game up to that stage, Neil?
Up until that stage, Galway should have been further ahead, is the truth. They had missed a couple of chances. And Cathal Mannion playing in a slightly more advanced role. And to be totally honest, the Limerick midfielder were struggling to pick him up whenever he made those runs through. And I don't think anybody was totally sure who was marking him. And whenever he broke through for the goal, obviously, you know, Kevin took it wonderfully out of the air, and it was I didn't see the pass on, even though you and I had the best seats in the house. And whenever he drove it into the turf and it popped up perfectly for Cathal, he decided to carry it on in, and obviously he finished it an absolute rasper. But he was really good in that period. Limerick were struggling to get to grips with him, and you know, had they taken all their opportunities, you know, it would have been very, very interesting to see Limerick's response to it. But Nicky Quaid, as you say, 25 minutes gone on the clock, he realises, you know, we're 6 points down, we're under the cosh here. And a bit of gamesmanship, he took off his helmet. And it's fair enough from his point of view. He decided, I'm going to do this. And it's then, you know, the ball's in the referee's court at that stage, really. I know at one stage during one of our championship matches this year, the fullback went down one knee, took the helmet off, and the referee was coming in, and I just shouted out at him, he's just wasting time, he's just wasting time. And the referee turned around, just blew the whistle and said, get the puck out. So I don't know what is the avenue available to the referee or the referee in that scenario. Can he give two men on the 20-yard line? You know, what can he do to say, no, look, you're not pucking out the ball, you're holding up the game deliberately without any cause to do so. And I'd love to have seen the referee just do that, just say, no, this is gamesmanship, I'm throwing it in the 20-yard line and see whatever happens. And that would have really added to the atmosphere. But Nicky Quaid took a chance, and I would say John Kiely and the Limerick backroom team were very happy that he did. But Nicky's probably, I think he is the eldest player on the Limerick team. He's an experienced man. I think he might be the only player over the 30 mark, which is scary for everybody else. But he took a chance and he got away with it.
Well, it happens a lot. It's happened a lot this year. Now, I noticed in the Killeara-Scommon football game, after a Scommon got a score, two Killeara lads went down and the referee just went in and booked one of them. I think he booked one of them and told them, lads, I know what you're up to. It happened 10 minutes later in Limerick and Galway. Kyle Hayes, he was in a collision with Darren Morrissey and he kind of just took his own helmet off and thrown it on the ground, trying to create another stoppage. And the ref, James Owens, was having absolutely none of it, and he just waved the play on this time. So I suppose he had it in his mind from the time before. But I actually watched it when the team doctor ran into Nicky Quaid, and he actually did absolutely nothing. Like, Nicky Quaid just bent down and the doctor just stood beside him, and all the while John Kiely is roaring in instructions, I suppose, to try and to change the flow of the game and for Limerick to kind of reset. And it was funny, the exact same thing happened watching the Cork and Kilkenny Camogie game yesterday. It was after Kilkenny got a score, and the Cork goalie just goes down, and it's the contact lens trick again. So it is becoming a bit of a blight on the games, because when you have momentum, it's the last thing you want is, you know, 5 minutes, and that's what the other team wants.
Yeah, I think we do. We need to give the referee some tool to deal with that situation where he deems that the game has been held up without cause, and support the referee in terms of doing that and let him make the call that he maybe does throw the ball in the 20-yard line right in front of the net of the offending team. Because, you know, would booking Nicky Quaid have done anything? Really, it may have just taken up a little bit more time. Different for an outfield player, because then he's under pressure about whether or not he can make a tackle or not. Or maybe both. Maybe you should book the player who's wasting the time and throw it on the 20-yard line, you know?
Definitely. I suppose the turning point then from then on was the save that Michael Casey made. Kevin Cooney ran through and flicked it to Brian Concannon, who actually on the replay got, you could see he made a great connection, and it was luck really. Maybe a bit of luck, a bit of skill from Michael Casey, that he just held his hurl out and hit the nose of the hurl. So that was a huge turning point. And then Limerick just gradually got back into the game. The ball went down the other end of the field, and Darrell Donovan, who was probably their best player in the first half and the man who kept them in the game when they were struggling, he scored an unbelievable point after he'd just been dispossessed down the wing. The ball was worked back out to him, and he did brilliantly to stick it over. And this kind of kick-started the Limerick revival. They were back to winning a point at half-time, and you could see that Galway, like they should have, as you said, Neil, they should have been up by more, and they were kind of trudging off and at half time, and you can nearly see what's coming as it came in the second half then.
Yeah, Limerick, obviously everybody's well aware of how they target and perform in that third quarter. That's when you have to be able to stick with them, and Galway couldn't, as it turned out. But you know, you're right, the cushion should have been so much more. You know, it wouldn't have been totally against the run of play for Galway to have went in 8-9 points up, in truth. And that save from Mike Casey, I know he didn't know very much about it, but you know, at the end of the day, he got his hurt to it, whether it was intentional or not. And it is a game of fine margins, and it's all about keeping momentum flowing in your favour. If that hits the back of the net, you know, you would fancy Galway to kick on and push for another score in the back of it, because they got let offs. Like, Limerick shooting in the first half was particularly poor. I think they had 6 or 7 wides in the first half, and there's games, you know, that go by 76, 77 minutes, and we don't see them having 7-8 wides. So Galway had a real opportunity, and yeah, they'll be kicking themselves because it's one that they've missed. But it's hard not to be impressed by Limerick's reaction to adversity, you know, being the 6 points down. It would have been more interesting now if they were the 8-9 down coming into the second half. But like, Dermot Burns, I thought, really led the renaissance for Vic. The way he hurled, he just wouldn't take a backward step. In that second half, he started to really dominate that area of the field. He was catching high ball, driving out, playing 1-2s. And then he started to nail the freeze as well, because he had missed a couple, and he's just a leader. But it's still fairly reliant. I thought that their two best performers were Aaron Galan and Seamus Flanagan. They make every ball stick. They're an incredible inside pairing. And the way Limerick do work the ball out to, you know, the 65 or in around midfield, and then they play the cross field ball. And then you see Galan, whoever collects the ball, you see Galan and Flanagan trying to almost run past each other and switch across. And if they can manage to use the offload, sometimes they use that guy as a decoy runner and they flick the ball over the bar. But sometimes they'll try and offload to the other one. He's coming at pace, and it opens up a brilliant goal opportunity. It's very hard to defend against, even though you know what they're trying to do, because you know we've seen that pattern so many times now from Limerick. But like Galan's goal, he caught that ball in the first half. You know, whenever Tom Morrissey just floated it in on top of him, he caught that ball off Dahi Burke. You know, Dahi Burke is 4 All Stars in a row in the full back line. That is not an easy thing to do, and he obviously finished it well. And I kind of thought, in the first half, Aaron Galan kept them in it. In the second half, Flanagan nearly took over a little bit, even though Galan got the second goal. You know, I think he was the match winner, actually. There's no doubt about it. Did he have 2-3 from play? You know, he takes some stopping.
Yeah. Like you mentioned the ball coming in, and it's like Darrell Donovan put in some of the most unbelievable balls you could see right into Galan's path. The very first one, actually, of the second half, Neil, he hit it into Galan, and Galan controls it exactly as he said, and Flanagan it collects it, and it's straight over the bar. So they're kind of, they're flying, and they're right at that rhythm straight away into the second half. So that was perfect for them. There was another time when you mentioned the decoy runner there, it just popped into my mind. Galan was running through for his point, and Hegarty runs by him, and Galan just pretends to give the hand pass, and he's gone the other side. So they know how to use that brilliantly. Just last thing on this game, Neil, like Aaron Galan, Don Lukiusik said it on the Sunday game, like he uses defenders as a target, and he can go from the front, but when it's his goals, he's coming from behind, and he's like a predator. He's in behind him, and he's kind of prowling around behind him, waiting for something to happen. And the Tom Morrissey ball was the perfect example. It comes in exactly as he's looking for it, and he's just gliding in the air. He's hanging up there, and his hand, it just never looks like he's going to not to drop a ball like that.
He's in great form. So his two best performances this year have been the Munster final and this weekend just passed with a semi-final. Again, as we spoke about with Peter Duggan, great trait when your best performances come in the biggest occasions. But we've just seen this now over the past 5 years or so with Aaron. He's developed into a very physically strong inside forward as well. And Don Logue is exactly right. And it's the A position, if you like, whenever that ball is landed on top of the fullback and you're in behind him. A man who used to play for him for a long time called Paddy Richmond from Dunloy used to do this with serious regularity, and he would just sneak in behind. The ball would be on top of the fullback. He'd come over the top, play the hurl, and he'd grab it and he'd be gone. Because whenever you're in behind, then and once you've secured the ball, you don't have anybody to beat other than the keeper. So Limerick are doing that. You know, it's not an accident. Whenever they see the fullback playing out in front, for obvious reasons, to try and stop the run or stop the ball coming in front of Aaron Galland, they're landing it on his head and they're backing Aaron Galland to win that aerial duel, because it's very, very hard for you to set up properly and hold the man off whenever they have that jump coming from behind you over your shoulder. And Galland's goal, you know, again, that one was even against the run of play a little bit, to be honest. And he just comes up with answers constantly for Limerick. You know, ball out in front, ball in over the top. He can do it. He's tough. He's physical. One of the first time I really thought, yeah, he's the real deal. It was Clare against Clare, yeah, in the Gaelic grounds. I think it's four seasons ago now. And after he scored a goal, he came out and he buried the Clare fullback with a shoulder when it should be the other way about, in my opinion, you know. But he was saying, you know, I'm here for the battle. I'm physically capable, let's go type thing. He was loving it. He loves that physical contact and loves that battle. Yeah, he's a serious, serious player. And Kilkenny will have to find a way of stopping him. I don't know which one of their inside backs suits him best. It is probably Hugh Lawler, because Hugh Lawler is incredibly quick and people don't often remark upon that, but he is very, very quick. And I think that's, even though people will probably think Seamus Flanagan and Hugh Lawler tie up very nicely, I think I'd put Hugh Lawler on Aaron Galland, because I do think they'll have to stop him if they want to stifle that Limerick forward line.
Oh, Galland is the man, definitely. Do you think it should be the back that if a person scores them, they should be the one going in to listen? You got that? I'm still here.
If I was playing fullback, I don't think I'd be welcoming a shoulder off of a forward who's just buried one in the back of my net. You know, I think, you know, it shows a little bit of a dip. You have to maintain that body language that says, you know, no, I'm here all day and I'm going to be with you for every step that you take here today. And it doesn't matter if you just scored a goal, or it doesn't matter if you just hit a wide. If you go for a shower, I'm going to be there to reach you a towel, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Listen, Neil, thanks a million for coming on today. A great weekend of hurling, and we're lucky we've another great day to look forward to with the All-Ireland final. And listen, thanks a million for coming on. Before the two hurling games, we obviously had the Camogie quarterfinals. Tipperary played Antrim on Saturday as the curtain raiser to Galway Limerick, and Tipperary were very much up against it for the first half an hour, and you know, they went in at halftime and were under a good bit of pressure. They pulled away, as you would expect, in the second half. Coach Devan was brilliant. Karen Kendi was brilliant. But Roisin McCormack definitely impressed for Antrim. I suppose the big game of the weekend was Cork and Kilkenny. They've had such a fierce rivalry. Kilkenny beat them last year. And Cork obviously won yesterday, won by a point, but they just couldn't. The player of the match was Denise Gall, and Cork just really struggled to get to grips with her. She scored 110 on the day. Her goal at the end was just absolute composure, and she showed such class and all the class that she has, really, to keep Kilkenny in that game. After the match, she was given the player of the match interview, and it was a funny enough moment. She was obviously devastated, very disappointed after losing the game. But Fergalini, the Glen Dimplex CEO, they're the sponsors of the Camogie Championship. He gives her the prize, which is it was a stereo or a speaker, which isn't a bad prize. Probably better than the usual dust collector of a plaque. It was a direct quote from Denise as she looked down to speaker. This doesn't really mean much to me, to be honest, which was quite funny. But look, a brilliant game, and Cork are now heading through to the semi-final. They'll be buoyed by the return of Aisling Thompson from her cruciate injury. She came on in the second half. That's going to be a huge game. It's obviously a huge opportunity on the other side of the draw for Waterford and Tipperary. One of them will get through to the final. So huge for them. There was a small bit of controversy at the end of the Cork and Kilkenny game, where John Darmody, the referee, he had a poor enough game, to be honest, and Amy O'Connor should have been given a penalty very late on. Ethan Norris, the Kilkenny goalie, almost ripped the jersey off her as she was going through for a goal. But and then I suppose it was in his head that he should have given that penalty, and Katie Power deserved a last minute free to level things up and didn't get it. And herself and Brian Dowling collared the referee at the final whistle. So look, I suppose it's we know, we were chatting with Neil earlier, it's so difficult for referees. Colm Lyons was so unlucky with that Mark Rogers goal that he had just blown the whistle just before the chance came, but a very tough job. So we're not going to give out about referees, but yeah, lots to look forward to with the Camogie and the hurling final, the Camogie semi-finals and the hurling final coming up in the next fortnight. Okay, so thanks to Neil for coming in for the chat, and thanks to our sponsors, Sure 72-hour protection. And we'll be back next week looking ahead to the football, to the hurling, and to all the rest of the championship games as the summer heats up.
You've been listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Sure, it won't let you down.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.